We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into a weekend edition of the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns, here with Andrew Spade. Andrew, it's been a minute since we've got together. A little bit of a chaotic week. I know you were traveling a little bit for work and moved the weekend before, but settled in, feeling good. It looks like things are in the background, settling in a little bit. I see one decoration back there. We're feeling good, right? We're sprucing things up.
Oh, no, it's still very much chaos. I just have most of the chaos is off camera. But right. Yeah, no, it is absolutely maybe one of the most hectic months of my life over the past month, which is good. I mean, it's all good stuff, which is nice. I mean, it's nice to not have to, you know, kind of say, well, it's all this stuff and then this bad thing happened. It's all been good stuff, but yeah, very busy and excited to be back on with you. And I mean, we talked a lot about the draft through the draft weekend, but excited to get back on with you and kind of take the bigger picture.
That's what we're going to try to do today. We're going to spend the second half talking about the questions coming out of the draft, because like Andrew said, we have provided you many of our big picture thoughts about the draft. But I think looking around the optics of who they picked and then some of the UDFAs, we still kind of want to see, like today we saw a couple names trickle in for one day tryout. They're not one days, but they're just rookie camp tryouts. Those guys will come and go. So we want to kind of get a feel for any of those we're excited about. We're trying to get more of the story, like, sort of herd them all into a section, and then we'll have more insight than just, hey, here's a name and they played at this university. That'll come next week. But like I said, for now, a little bit out of nowhere, we have Andrew Berry appearing on the Pat McAfee show, which I'm usually not like the aggregation king fan, but I do think, like last year, Andrew, I'm sure you recall when Kevin Stefanski went on that Pardon My Take pod, like you get those guys into this comfortable setting with, like, I don't know, those, not that the Pardon My Take guys are like former professional athletes, but at least have, you know, some cachet, and you can feel those guys loosen up the way they're different than when they're at the podium in Berea or at the podium inside the field house there in Indy getting ready for the combine. It's just a different vibe. Now, I will give those guys credit because they have been going to local radios, the ESPN Cleveland and the 92.3s, and providing some time there, right? So they have been trying to get out and spread the message of what they're trying to do. I do think that they're always trying to win public favor, largely because, again, they're trying to do big picture things as an organization. Winning comes in important when you're talking about tax dollars for stadiums. But, and listen, I guess we should, the rendering, Andrew, we didn't even say anything about that. The rendering that's circling, we got to hit that first. This is what happens. We get on the podcast and things just come up. The rendering of the stadium, man, like, what is going on here? Is that, are we to believe that this thing is real? Like the one that's out there, I guess I could put a link on Twitter if you're just completely out of the loop on this. If the description of this pod, you can find a link to take you directly to somebody who tweeted out the photo of this. But the OBR staff was doing research straight up, you know, going deep dive Sherlock Holmes type stuff here and trying to figure out, is this an AI generation or what? But it feels like the way those things look and people trying to tell you it's legit, that this thing is going to be, I think you and I had this talk back about like modern design and being so like rigid and like just lacking any character. And I see these renderings and the joke going on between us was like, this looks like an Amazon warehouse. And it's like, that's probably not what you want when you're trying to establish a little bit of character around your stadium. So you know, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I just was looking at that rendering thinking I there's a lot of cool stuff around it, but the stadium down sunk in where they're going to put it a little below ground. You got to make this thing at least relatively cool on the outside. I understand the inside is more important, but the outside's like, can we make it a little bit cool? Can we, you know, what do you think?
I, our buddy Wreck This League convinced me that it's not a real drawing. At least I don't know that that means that somebody made it up, but at least that it's, you know, AI was involved, because there's some stuff around the edges of that picture that don't look real, don't make sense. And so that's kind of part one. And then part two is, you know, you hope that this is somebody that is maybe trying to make something look cool that maybe doesn't know. If you compare it, for example, it was reported that the Browns were working with the people that designed the Minnesota Stadium.
Yeah. I can't remember the architectural group.
But if you go back, you can just Google Minnesota new stadium renderings. And the first renderings from that look like real renderings. They are during the daytime and they are from ground level. You don't typically real like architectural renderings don't come from like an above view, because you can't really see what's going on with the building. So there's four or five different things about this that just don't pass the smell test as far as something that a real architectural firm created. And so then it becomes a question of, is this a concept that the Haslam group is maybe like shopping around and they've cut some corners, or is it something that somebody just made up? And so I think that, considering that the Browns have not spoken to the veracity of this and they haven't released anything else, we don't know. We're kind of in that unknowing space, but I'm kind of treating this for now kind of like some uniform leaks before they announced the redesign of the uniforms, in that I've got some healthy skepticism. If it is real, this whole project is in serious trouble, because I cannot imagine going to the Ohio State Legislature and asking for what is reportedly going to be $1.2 billion to build something that, you know, like you said, it looks like an Amazon warehouse. It looks like, I thought it looked like a Bass Pro Shop. Like, it's just not, it's not a football stadium. And I understand that there might be some limitations about how tall they can go because they're near the airport, but that does not mean that you have to build something that looks anodyne and lacks all character. There are still opportunities. And so I'm first of all, skeptical. Second of all, if this is real, holy crap.
Let's hope that you're right in the fact that they're just kind of like putting some things out. I would not put this past them at all to go that route of just sort of dangling things out there in the public. How do they react to it and see what happens? You know, this is sort of everywhere. I mean, dating back to some of the stories of the Hugh Jackson era, the Browns were very, very much paying attention to Twitter and what people say on it. So you would think it would improve how they handle social media, but it doesn't always work out that way for them.
We're on social media enough to know that the more you're on social media, the worse your perspective on the rest of the world becomes. Like, it's a negative feedback loop. It's not a positive one. So if you're listening to what other people say, the more you do that, the worse your perspective becomes, because you start thinking about, we've done that on this show before. Like, you'll get criticism on a specific topic and then you start to make excuses for yourself. But most people that are listening don't want to hear excuses. They just want to hear your opinion. And so you get caught up in that. And this, it's the same thing with this. And I think, I don't know how much the team, like the front office is, I would hope that they're not too online. Although we did get confirmation from Andrew Berry that he has seen the laser eyes meme.
Yeah, they're online, no doubt.
Right, but
they're hiding, but they're there.
Right, but we know for a fact that J.W. Johnson is very online and will respond, etc. So, like, I do think that there's an element with this organization of, especially that person, sort of shopping ideas around a little bit. I think that's why the white face mask is back, because these guys understood that it was really, really popular with most of the fans. And so stuff like that, I think, tends to get picked up and run with by the team. So there is definitely a symbiotic relationship between the marketing side, the business side, and fan Twitter. I mean, they had a Twitter poll to choose the next dog logo, right? So, like, there's no doubt in my mind that they could be soft launching some stadium concepts to try and gauge the market.
Well, make fun of that stadium rendering at will. Again, attached, you can find it. That's enough on that. We want to hit on the quotes from Andrew Berry that mattered in the time spent with McAfee, because again, different, you just get a different vibe for these guys. So if you follow along, we wrote this up at the OBR and I wanted to kind of analyze this, he spoke first to the first thing that they pulled, because I wanted to pull highlights for you guys, was the Jerry Jeudy conversation about, you know, a couple things that he asked about, like, how do you go about finding that player? What, how do you target them? And then what about Jerry Jeudy obviously wanted to, that made you want to bring him in here. So they talked about in analyzing that a lot of teams are playing 11 personnel everywhere, and the Browns uptick in 11 personnel moving away from multiple tight ends is something that they have done. We expect that trend to continue. The draft gave us more evidence that that trend is going to continue for them. So everything's right in front of us telling us the Browns are going to live in 11. We'll see how diverse they can get out of 11, but nonetheless, they need very specific skill sets. And he talked about Jeudy's ability to win inside and outside, be able to align anywhere. You kind of lose the predictability there, which is a part you want to have. And then again, these are very important sentences, because this is how, you know, Andrew Berry is talking to his staff when they're talking about, do we want to trade for him? Calls him a top-notch separator and a player who had a diverse number of ways he could produce on the field inside and out, right? And talked essentially about his ability to, you know, win in just a variety of ways. And that's a skill set that they went, even mentioned going deep, because that's another skill set that people want to talk about the Browns not having enough of, which is speed. But he's mentioning that as a part of Jeudy's profile. And again, if you go look at like some of Amari Cooper stuff, pretty damn good deep threat. But nonetheless, everybody is excited and loves the idea of more speed on the football field. And Jeudy does provide that, right? So that to me is an insightful quote. Learning about how the Browns think about wide receivers is sort of an evolving thing, right, Andrew, that they are moving around maybe some of how they felt about the position 2 years ago and have kind of altered their specific skill set. Because the thing I keep coming back to is you keep hearing them talk about on offense, this is something we keep the buzzword of, like, choice routes. Pay attention to that. Keep hearing it. It's probably going to happen. Barry keeps this offseason referencing very specific skill sets. So they're looking for guys that cross the part of the offense that they need. Not to say you're not always doing that, but like sometimes you can get a little obsessed with the player and not the fit. And I feel like the fit is what they're most worried about now, which is something that we should want them to say more of, because the fit is where they actually can find the right production.
Right. There seems to be a definite change to me, and not only the way that they're looking at players in the offense, but also just the way that they're conceiving of the offense in general. I think the big picture shift to me is that, and I think there's a level of frustration that this hasn't happened sooner, but that they're really trying to gear it around the quarterback first and foremost, and then the passing game. And I think partially due to where the team was personnel-wise when Stefanski and Barry took over, but also partially due to what Kevin Stefanski was comfortable running when he got here in 2020, this has been a run-first team. Right. I mean, those numbers have slowly been shifting over the course of the 4 years that they've been here, but they were one of the heaviest run teams in the league over the first few years. And it's clear that they are changing that approach, which is part of the reason that what happens with Nick Chubb this year and how they long term solve the running back position or fill the running back position is, I think, less important than it has been, because I don't think they're going to run the ball as much. So, to that point, then getting certain types of wide receivers that can separate, that can run those sorts of more complicated passing offenses that you're talking about, is important, because if you're relying on the offense to run through the quarterback wide receiver connection, you really need to be investing in those spots as much as really any on the team. I mean, I think to a certain extent, part of it is the Bengals got lucky with when they had the first overall pick and the players that they drafted, but I think the Bengals are really kind of the model for building a team around those positions first, and how much you need to invest in those positions to get to that level. You know, unless you happen to find a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, you need not just the quarterback, but also probably two really good wide receivers.
Yeah. I feel like that's a statement. The Patrick Mahomes thing is like going to be the next decade of like looking like,
understand it as implied.
Yeah, it's almost this trick that he played on the league for a few years, 3 or 4 years, and then everyone's like, oh yeah, he's that different, right? Like, we can't do that. So some teams lost a little bit of their ability, and maybe that was a part of the Deshaun Watson trade decision, right, where you're thinking he can solve a lot of your problems, and then you're like, well, no, never mind, he can't. We need to supplement him with more. The offensive line investment, seeing the wide receiver investment, so on, et cetera. I think it's just particularly noteworthy, Andrew. Yeah. Next thing from Mr. Barry, he referenced how fun the season was, which I think all of us are in line with that. Maybe we prefer it to be a little less stressful, but how fun the season was for him. And he compared it to 2012. He was a pro scout with the Colts back then. I think he actually, if I recall, I think he was more than just the pro scout. He might've been their coordinator or at least an important part of the, yeah, he was the pro scouting coordinator. I want to make sure I get that right. So he had a pretty important role, and that was the Chuck Pagano season, the leukemia. He missed a lot of that year. I think he missed like week four, three or four through like the final week of the season, if I recall. That was such a, that was a wild year. And that was like around the time Andrew Luck was taking off. And the reason I remember it so vividly is because I was looking at this as the Browns were approaching 11 wins, that Colts team was the worst statistical, like DVOA and other elements, 11 win team in NFL history, but they just kept finding ways to win, which it's a funny parallel when we talk about the Browns, not that they were historically bad in some spots, but the offense was really bad. And like, they just, you and I talked about it like every week, like how are they just keep doing this. They keep finding these ways to win. So it's not hard to see Barry come up with some of those crossover comparisons between those 2 years, right? Is obviously that was a miracle situation in in Indy, and then obviously launched Bruce Arians into his Arizona stint and ultimately getting another opportunity with the Bucs and winning a Super Bowl, right? Next is what I consider to be more important, his comments on Kevin Stefanski. Incredibly down to earth, easy to work with, always speaks his mind and organization follows him. But I like when he's saying, like, he obviously is a funny, he's got a good dry sense of humor and he's funny, but like when he needs to challenge us, he challenges us, but he comes from a place of like our best intentions, like the best intention for the person and the player, and like the players respect that. And he mentions it as a reason why they would run through the wall for him. All of the things you want to hear a GM talk about a head coach saying. And then I do think this is their belief, Andrew, when he says that he's won two of the last four Coach of the Year awards, and we feel like he hasn't even come close to reaching a ceiling. That's, I mean, you like to hear that. I mean, it's hard to quantify that, but it's what you want your GM to say when you have a growing relationship there.
Yeah, I have thought about that a lot this offseason, like we do continue to expect at some point they will receive extensions. And I just wonder how much that relationship has sort of changed. You know that it has grown, obviously, but it goes back to your first point that it feels that the team is much more in step in terms of the types of players that they look for and that sort of thing compared to where they were when they got together in 2020. And so that relationship being strong, and there's not many examples, you know, probably, I mean, in recent years, we'll talk about Kansas City again, like Andy Reid has his right-hand guy and Brett Veach, you know, John Schneider and Pete Carroll in Seattle is another good example. I think what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are doing in San Francisco, but often in the NFL, it tends to be one or the other, right? Like that the coach has sort of outsized, like what happened with Mike Vrabel in Tennessee. He had outsized influence on the personnel process and is part of what got him fired probably. So you see examples of that where one guy kind of accumulates it all. And then when the decisions don't go his way, obviously he's going to be the one that ends up leaving. So, I think it's you can think back, Jake, to the like many, many years of Browns off seasons where they would hire a general manager and pair him with an existing coach that was already in the building, or fire the head coach and pair him with an existing general manager. You know, it was always a forced arranged marriage and it never worked. Or even when they would hire them at the same time, you know, they hire Eric Mangini and he just kind of brings George Kokinas as like his second in command.
Right.
And it's not a true empowered general manager. There were long stretches, 15-year stretches where the Browns kept wanting that ideal of an empowered general manager and an empowered head coach working in tandem. And it's just really hard to find in the NFL. And it seems like the Browns have found it. You would expect as time goes on, that would create a benefit, the synergy of two talented people working closely together. They would be more, it's just like any other sort of collaboration. The Beatles aren't the Beatles unless they're all four in the same band. Like they would all be good. Paul McCartney would be a great solo artist, but he was better because he was, you know, trying to impress John Lennon the whole time or whatever, right? So that also exists in football, I think.
The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to gametime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last minute ticket decisions in the best possible way, with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last-minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day. And that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. I was thinking about this as you were making a good point there. Like, I obviously believe there are some head coaches that we would take over Kevin Stefanski. We've done this. We need to update that at some point this offseason. But in probably the same at GM, there might be like a Howie Roseman you would like more. It's harder at GM. GMs are a little tricky because the roller coaster, you have to really like be involved with your team to know all of those key decisions they make. But I'm just keep thinking the tandem of these guys is such an amazing thing to think that, like, after 4 years with two disappointing years in the middle, I don't feel like I could be much higher on them as a unit. They just seem so very good at the process of checking and balancing each other in a way. And now we don't know what Di Podesta's role in that is. And I hate that we don't have a little more clarity on that, and probably we'll never get it until someone writes a book. But like, I just feel like those two represent each other really well and represent the organization in a really clean way. That is, it's like we're becoming used to that stability and normal. Like that is, as you just ran through a long list of their history's issues, it's a thing I think we're probably underselling of how like unique that is. Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm just looking at the standings around the league and thinking of kind of duos where they're on the same page, but both have their own job responsibilities. I think the one I didn't mention that I should have mentioned is the Rams with McVay and Les Snead. I think they've been very unconventional in the way that they've built their teams, but they've been very, very successful. They've got the trophy. So,
which another thing I want to say real quick, because you made a good point that reminded me of the Rams, is go read what's Jordan Rodriguez put out there about their scouting stuff. Like the Browns need to do that. I don't know who the person is they're letting in that can write that story the right way.
It's probably you, Jake.
No, not me. Somebody's out there. The new guy they hired from ESPN. I don't know. Seems like a good dude. Whoever it is, tell the story that needs to be told, because the way the Browns are doing this is interesting. It's funny, Andrew, because the one they released today, which we're going to get off on another tangent, but isn't that what weekend podcasts are for? Just different tangents. They released something I found very interesting in comparison to what you and I were talking about with, like, are they just doing things differently to become less predictable? And that's an interesting quote to hear, because what Rodriguez wrote today is that while she was with the Rams, the pro scouts run programs that track trends and patterns in rival teams' draft decisions. When one team drafts receivers, do they only look for players who run a sub 4.4 second 40-yard dash? When another team drafts offensive linemen, will they remove a player with short arms from their board? How are character or injury flags weighed by certain teams? That shit is fascinating, because it can give you a leg up on knowing that the four teams in front of us don't want an example. They moved up for Braden Fisk. They must have known some team would really want him in the next few picks. Otherwise, you don't get that aggressive. Like, not to say they're right or wrong on that choice, but like having those historical trends is a really meaningful tool to evaluate whether you think a player is going to fall to you on the board or not. And I would just love to know if the Browns are doing that kind of stuff. Now, I can't complain. It's like every team's getting access. This is just the LA scenario, which is really cool. It just is a glimpse into like all of that stuff that I hope that they continue to do. And they're kind of teasing a little bit of it with how much they're getting out in the public right now. Right.
They have been more involved with media over the past few weeks, which is nice to see, because that has been one of the issues, is that especially once you get into the grind of the season, they really kind of close up and don't share as much. So it's nice when they feel like they have the opportunity to go out and socialize a little bit more, that they're doing more of it. I think that they are definitely, I mean, if you look around the league, if you look at the standings, to go back to your previous question, I feel like they're probably in the top five of general manager head coach duos. Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh is another one that I think you got to mention, right? Yep. Just because of it was Newsome for a long time, but that transition was very smooth. And so you got to give them credit for that. But you talk about the Bills. The Bills had a real wobble this year. And Sean McDermott, I think, is on pretty thin ice there, right? Like, you talk about you mentioned the Eagles. Howie Roseman can't keep a head coach there, right? So, like, Nick Sirianni's been on the hot seat. Does he stick around, or do they try and fix that? And, you know, who knows which way they might have to go there. So, and then, you know, there's teams like, for example, the Colts, where they can't seem to find a head coach, although they maybe did now, but then the general manager's been the same for a long time and doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing. So you often, more often than not, would get stuck with one kind of dud, and the other guy's pretty good at his job if you kind of look around the league. Or like I said before, one of them has got all the real power and the other one's making the decisions. So, I think it's really interesting that it's this podcast has been pretty critical of things that they have failed to do at times. And I don't think that they're perfect, but the understanding has always been that nobody's pitching a shutout in the NFL, right? Like, nobody's throwing a no hitter. Everybody's making mistakes. It is not a science. It is an art. And if you can get guys that form that relationship over time, maybe that becomes part of their strength in a way that other teams don't have.
Yeah.
And I'm maybe is a little more wish casting than what we're really seeing, but it does feel like we're headed in that direction.
It does. And they're young and they're learning the NFL, like these positions. This is the first time as a head coach, first time as a GM, and they're learning it. Now, if there are glaring misses, the inevitability will happen, right? But they're not doing that. They're not perfect. We call them out on it when they're not, but we certainly give them the praise they deserve when they are, which is, again, relatively frequent that they've gotten some things right here. Now, the biggest one looming and is the Deshaun Watson thing that will define them.
You read my mind, because the thought that just occurred to me, and our friend Corey Kinnon has made this point in this offseason, I think it's worth saying again, can they survive that?
Yeah.
If, you know, and I don't want to go too far down that road.
Right.
Everybody understands what's at stake. I think there's a chance that they've done enough in all the other areas of the roster. And as you know, you talked about the two-time coach of the year and the job that he's done, that perhaps they can be, the ownership will say, we all got this one wrong, but let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
That's it kind of stinks to be like all the things that we actually talk on this pod don't matter. Just this one thing, but it does. And it's rare for a head coach GM pairing to get a second crack at the quarterback decision, the marquee quarterback decision. They inherited Baker Mayfield. I think it was pretty universally known they were not going to hold on to that player because the performance didn't match the contract's likely demands. And obviously the optics around that turned sour there. But again, you had the choice of like trading everything to move up in the draft. And that offseason back when that whole thing was happening, moving on Mayfield, I remember watching like Jordan Love tape. Are they going to try to trade? It's not like it was Watson was the only thing. Whoever was the leader, we still don't know. Whoever, they're all in. So they're all putting in the right foot in terms of making everybody publicly think this, but whoever was the leader will ultimately pay for that, right? Maybe they made a pact, Andrew, that said, if Watson fails, and again, he could have a great year next year, none of this matters. But if he fails, there was a pact that like, nobody's paying for this. We'll let you guys draft a quarterback and we'll go from there, give you another time. But like that remains the single most fascinating thing that we may find out, because Watson can't get back to his old self and they have to move on eventually. Or someday that happens 8 years down the line, 10 years when he retires, because he's figured it out and he's playing well again. It's quite obvious they want it to be the 8 to 10 years down the line, because then that doesn't leave anything to mystery, right? Speaking of Watson, McAfee said, asked a good question about the rust factor, right? Like, I think it's an under-discussed thing about like the mental and physical rust from taking a year and a half off. It was sort of talked about when he was coming back, but kind of left off the table for why he gets back to his best version, right? Like, obviously, people were giving him a chance to come back the 6 games. There's rust, blah, blah, blah. But to get back to the best version of himself, there's mental and physical rust that he has to knock out of the way. And that was a question McAfee asked, which I think was a really good one. And what kind of came away for me on that conversation, Andrew, is that they said in a very interesting way, he said, it was a range of outcomes that we planned for. So it wasn't like we were blindsided by him not being his best version at various times the last few years. But he said it very clearly, and almost like his tone changed, we expect Deshaun Watson to be really good next year. So there's like third year into the organization type pressure here that he needs to figure it out and be at minimum a top 12 quarterback again, based on the percentage of salary cap he's eating before the Browns start asking tough questions, the preparation for the future. So that was just something that I noted. Did you note it? I found it to be relatively like crystal clear to me that like, yeah, we understand, we accept that he had these issues before last 2 years, planned for it a little bit, but now he needs to be the guy. He's got to be the guy that we're paying.
Right. I think it makes sense. And I think it makes sense that they understand, because of the realistic part of this is that they have to start preparing now to get him off the roster. You know, if he's not going to be good enough, they have to find a succession plan next offseason. They can't, I mean, you know, this year can be what it is one way or the other, but they can't go in. If he's bad this year, they can't run it back in 25. The right. Leash is up. So at that point, now you're trying to find a cheap quarterback option somewhere, which is easier said than done in the NFL. So then it becomes a question of at what point do you move on from that player? How acrimonious is that divorce? How disruptive is his agent in that process, et cetera, et cetera? How cooperative are they?
Quarterback coach, but whatever. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. And so there's all of that. And then on the flip side, it's the idea that like it's time for the trade to start bearing fruit, because if he's good, then you actually, this is going to blow some people's minds, start thinking about an extension.
You do. Yeah.
Because it buys you some more runway with the cap, which is the most important thing with the gigantic contract. And so either way, it feels like it hasn't been long because he's only played 12 games. It's been two full years he's been on the roster at least, right? Yeah. So like it's a 5-year contract, they're 40% of the way through it.
Again, when the trade happened, felt like everybody presumed a couple games, and then it turned into a bigger deal. And this NFL fiasco, and yeah, it's just nothing's gone as planned. Like that's where we're at right now. Like not a single part of the Deshaun Watson experience based on what they could have planned for the good outcomes to be has happened.
Right. Quite clearly. So that's what he's saying. That's what Barry is saying. It's like, let's get back on plan.
We need the good outcome, buddy.
Right.
We need it. It's time. We need it now. Quick hitter on Nick Chubb. He didn't say anything other than, and again, I cannot claim to be perfect listening to the radio bits that Andrew is doing, but like he said, they expect him to play in 2024, like flat out. There's an expect, not like, yeah, we'll see how it's going and there's a chance. No, he's like, you mentioned how cool it's going to be when he runs out of the tunnel in Cleveland Brown Stadium, and that they expect him to play in 2024. And then he's, you know, I don't think he's lying about this. Like he's got some load bearing stuff to do on his knee the next few weeks. Like they don't know the timetable for return. How does he respond? You got Nick Chubb posting like Batman getting up from a bloody, getting beat up and recover. So maybe Nick is feeling really good ahead of schedule, which wouldn't surprise me because he is superhuman in a lot of ways at that position and relative to NFL players. And nothing would surprise me with Nick. You could tell me he's coming back week one this year, and I'd be like, all right, yeah, that's kind of who he is. It's just how he rebounds from things like this. Or he's back week 12. The range of outcomes is wide. The encouraging thing to me is that they expect him to be there in 2024, and I think they're acting accordingly with this running back room. If they did not and things were really ugly and he hadn't walked yet, they would have drafted a guy. I feel relatively confident in that. I know we don't like to take definitive takes, but if he was awfully like rough, they would have drafted a guy. I firmly believe that.
Yeah, this to me feels like a correction from the pre-draft press conference where he was a lot less committal to Nick Chubb. And maybe that was part of his draft strategy. Who knows? But this feels like a correction back to kind of the course that I thought we were on before those comments, which really kind of shook my belief in where things were headed. But yeah, I think I agree with what you said. And I think that does seem to be the path forward. But it is also, I mean, with him and with Watson, you don't know until you see it, right?
Right. Fair. Very fair. But back in 24, hold on to that, folks. Last thing is, something you and I have talked about. This was an interesting answer. So McAfee, again, to the credit he deserves here, asked some great questions, and his guys did too. Asked about the home road splits of this defense, which is not something Barry has faced very often. And he kind of said that like, he kind of ran from it. He said that it's like it's a 17 game season and there's some random patterns that happen in these 17 game seasons that don't carry much meaning. For like trying to pull away that the Browns can't play on the road. That's what the takeaway was, that their dominance at home helped ease the overall aggregate of the perception of the defense. But he kind of ducked away from the road defense performance questions. But I'm not just going to be honest here, Mr. Barry. I'm not going to stop being nervous about that until they give us some evidence, because it was rough at times with teams. You know, when they couldn't jump snap counts and couldn't do a lot of the stuff that they like to do at home, they give them some advantages and pressure package scenarios and stuff like that. So, go prove it, buddy. That's what we need, because I don't think that's just random.
No, I don't think there's any proof that it is. I mean, I think it's pretty well documented that being at home gives a defense an advantage. So I think the reason we talk so much about the offense, the reason why Andrew Berry said what he said about Deshaun Watson, is because the offense has to be a lot better for this Brown season to be successful. And so the flip side of that is that I am kind of at a place mentally of being prepared, expecting the defense to be worse, because defense tends to regress. There's not a lot of stickiness with good defenses because it tends to be a little bit random because there's a turnover component, even though the Browns didn't benefit from that a ton last year. But there's a missed field goal. There's all sorts of stuff that's luck-based that is not under the defense's control. And then you add in the part where if your unit plays better in a home situation than an away situation, that will put a limiter on you know, kind of how good your defense can be. It's also like which quarterbacks you face, right? I mean, some of the most crooked numbers the Browns defense put up were facing quarterbacks whose names I can't now remember. I'm trying to think of the Arizona Cardinals quarterback they faced, and I can't.
Clayton
Toon, right? Just threw that poor kid to the wolves because Kyler wasn't ready to come back, and they had traded Josh Dobbs, right? So it just becomes this like that's almost a bye week, you know, or a scrimmage or whatever. So if instead of that you get unlucky and you face like 15 or 17 quarterbacks who are totally healthy, that can change the way those numbers look too. So I'm expecting the defense to be around the top 10, but certainly not like a runaway near historical unit that's rivaling another historical unit for one of the best defenses of the past decade.
And I don't think we ever felt they were that last year. We were talking about it in the sense of like, here's what the numbers tell us and all that. But we're like, there's just, you know, teams figure them out sometimes here in a way that is meaningful and can hurt their season if they don't fix it, and you know, kind of hurt their season a little bit down in Texas. So yeah, listen, that's it. That's Andrew Berry's stuff. Go watch it. It's on the McAfee Twitter feed. You can watch it. The Browns probably will post some of that stuff too, maybe, but anyway, we wrote up a whole article examining it at the OBR. If you want to peel back the quotes and have some discussions, we're going to wrap this one. This is a pretty lengthy one. We're going to wrap, and we'll do some of the bigger offseason questions on another pod. So come back to the feed and check that out. Otherwise, listen, good show. A lot of stuff here. Stadium renderings you can find in the description of the pod. And then a lot of great stuff from Andrew Berry that we like to discuss as well. So we always appreciate you guys rating and reviewing the pod. Helps us, again, I say it every time, it helps us get found by Browns fans, and you guys are doing great with that. If you haven't done it, please do it. Helps us a lot. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Be well. Go Browns.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.